You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Kick, Instagram, and everybody's favorite, LinkedIn. And I just want to say I'm still looking for a job, you guys. Oh,
wow, man. We got Kick and LinkedIn going. We are really popping it off right now.
Yes. But we have a packed show for you all this evening. A absolutely wonderful array of guests. But before we do any of that, we got to pay tribute to some awesome people who support the show and keep it going at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Once a month, we read off the names as a thank you, Pete. That's absolutely correct. Really, truly, Pete, you are the gravy to our curds and french fry, as I always say. We say thank you to anybody who supports us at the $5 and up level at patreon.com/comicbookclub. So let's read off their names now, starting with Oitis Larson,
Aaron C. Hollis,
Aaron Flo,
Adam DeRose,
Adam Marks,
Adriel Moreland,
Elena Fontenot,
Andrew Primo,
Andrew Tillman,
AP,
Beercat PhD,
Bradley Hansen,
Carrie Matthews,
Chad Brickett,
Chad Post,
Chen Smal,
Christina Jaramillo,
Perfect. Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Lua.
Corey Cheshire.
Corey Smoker.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
David Donaldson.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Which way? Doug Sadaway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett M.
Enrique Chumbas.
Gary Mayer.
Gerard Devilliers.
Ian Rainey.
Isaac Carter.
British. JG.
Jack Foster.
Jake Fry.
The Fry to our gravy and curd. James Connolly.
Jared Sloan.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joe Benton.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
He's so wrong, it's Josh Wright.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wiggler.
Kaya Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Karrion Broderick.
Lance Kaminsky.
Luana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Matt Tice.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Max Baker.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef, Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies. Oren Dix.
Orlando Kelly Jr.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Bentano.
Roxanne Tyler.
Yes, to my mom. I just saw her today. She drove me to Canada. Russ Burlingame.
Sam Lim.
Sarah Schottenmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Saunter.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Scotty Dew.
Severin.
Spencer Gobills.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Banch.
The Mysterious Tom.
Troy Milliner.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
W.M. Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you all for supporting the show. Truly, we could not do it without all of you.
And there's some new names on there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
P, I feel like you've been working on your pronunciations. Shouts to that. And Alex, did you get hit in the head with a hammer? We'll never know. We'll never know what happened there.
Caught a little bit of the old peep. Act, I like to call it. Exactly. You can support our Patreon, $2 and up, and you get access to our entire back catalog of podcasts going all the way back to 2011. That's thousands of podcasts, many of which are not online anymore, as well as our very active, very fun comic book club Discord and other perks and fun stuff. So once again, check it out, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But as mentioned, we have a ton of awesome guests tonight, so why don't we bring in our first bunch here. Please. They are the creators behind Fool's Gold, Death by Karaoke, which is out, I believe, today from Gallery 13. Yes. They are Jenna Dingo Doodles Waldenga, Felix Erdick, and Avery Howitt. Here we go. Hello. Did I mangle everybody's names, or did I get clues?
Absolutely.
I think it's just his last name.
My last name's an abomination. It's Felix Ernich.
Ernich.
I'm surprised you got Waldenga. So
yeah.
Not even my teachers got that. So you're already above. Oof. And I have to say, all of the name reading, I didn't think name reading could be entertaining, but you guys made it entertaining.
Oh my God. That's the biggest compliment we could ever get.
Right. So it's like a hell of a way to start the show. Down pat.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to shake it up. Keep them guessing. Keep us guessing. Otherwise, we'd get stale.
So let's talk about this book. This is very exciting. This is based, Jenna, on your YouTube channel, YouTube series, and then fleshed out into a graphic novel. There's a couple of members of the creative team who aren't here. I just want to give a shout out in particular to Chris Hastings, who wrote and helped craft the book, who one of our good friends, been on the show a ton of times. He is great. Where did this start? Like, where did the idea of going from YouTube channel to graphic novel? I assume there were some steps in between. How did this actually happen?
Yeah, there was definitely a couple steps. I mean, because first, Fool's Gold was originally, first of all, a Dungeons & Dragons campaign I played with my friends, which are here as well. And then I decided, you know what, why don't I talk about it on YouTube and animate it? There's a genre on YouTube called Storytime Animations. And I was like, why don't I take my hand at that? And I did the very first episode, which was really about my character messing up so bad singing karaoke that they released The Apocalypse, which was the Tarrasque. If anybody knows Dungeons & Dragons, that is a very, very strong monster. So from there, that episode just blew up, and I just decided, why don't I just keep talking about it episodically? And I started to animate it and everything. But then from that standpoint, it started to snowball into us creating a module, which is in Dungeons & Dragons. It's like a rule book, but you can essentially apply those rules to your own game. And we wanted to do it in the Fool's Gold world, which we held a Kickstarter for.
Nice.
Yeah, there we go. Nice. So the Kickstarter went crazy. We raised a lot. Like, it was...
$2.5 million US.
US, yeah.
Damn!
Oh my God.
We were at the time,
solid.
At the time, we were only beaten by Avatar Legends.
Yeah, the last.
Which is like, fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, they get it. So... we did that, and with that Kickstarter, we got noticed by UTA, which is a talent agency, and then we talked to them about, like, our goals and what we were going for with this whole Fool's Gold thing, and they suggested, why not make a graphic novel, which was, I mean, it's funny, because when they pitched it to me, I actually was like, because the whole idea was that I didn't know if I wanted to, like, recreate the story that I'd already told. It just felt like I was just kind of rehashing it again, and I was like, I don't know how that would work. But then they really convinced me when they were like, you know, not
UTA family. Was like, that's what Hollywood is, so do that.
Yeah, it's just a regurgitation machine. No. For this, it was different, where they were like, you know, not everybody's going to watch the series on YouTube.
Right.
They're going to want other mediums to explore the story, which is a really cool story. So why not try it in a different medium? And plus, with that medium, we're able to expand and explore different aspects of the story that I just kind of was like, I'm not going to talk about that. Just because I'm like, I don't want to animate that. Like, I have to do the work. I'm not going to do that, like a crazy fight or something like that. I'm not talented like that. So, yeah, it was just translating to a different medium. But the whole process of trying to find, like, okay, the first of all, who's going to write it? Because I'm not doing that. I have to literally keep doing what I'm doing. So we went through a couple people with the writing, and then we landed on Chris. Actually, Chris was our very first interview.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, and it was funny because he already knew my stuff. And that was a big thing. He was just like, I'm already a fan. And I was like, boom, done. Because I knew he was going to be able to respect the material.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being like, I'm going to make it better because I think it, I can do it better. So it's like, well, we want to work together because I know it can go up a couple levels, but I want somebody who respects it.
Well, and especially to talk about it a little bit, there's just so much going on here from it taking so many ideas, a monkey's paw switched out with a crocodile hand, something like flouting the monkey's paw trope that we talk about a lot. But truly, there's so many, you're mixing so many genres here, so you need someone that can handle all of that material, basically.
Yeah, especially because in Fool's Gold, we love our chaos, right? And the dice decide what happens, so it is chaotic by nature, but then you have to try to translate this into a cohesive story that actually follows the plot. Well, at the same time, we do still talk about the actual players rolling the dice, too. That is an element in the story as well.
Yeah, big, big element. It was cool trying to figure out, like, the flips and stuff. But anyway, so, but then we had to go to the art, which was, of course, Avery.
Yeah.
So, Avery, why don't you explain how you got into it?
So, I was kind of on the ground floor because I was one of the original players in that D&D campaign. I played Gothy, she's the tall lady with the dreads and the mask over her face. So when they told me about a graphic novel, they were like, hey, do you want to do this? Because I'd already been doing comics pretty much as for about 10 years in my spare time as being like my medium of choice. And they were like, do you want to do it? And I was like, I don't know. it was a great idea, but I was afraid I couldn't handle it. It was such a big undertaking. And then after a while, they're like, yeah, we totally respect that choice. Sure, we're going to go look at some other options. And then I was like, no, come back. So I took it up. I took it up under the condition that I illustrated it but didn't color it. We got in a colorist, Princess Arbella, or Abella from, we got a colorist. But from then, that was... that's just kind of how it went from then on. Then it became a full year and spades of my life of taking Chris's wonderful script and translating it, and then going in back to the story, back to that table in my mind and thinking like, okay, how is this? How did we feel there at the table? How did this play out? How did it look in our mind's eye? Some of the stuff that, like, again, Dingo was saying she didn't want to draw in the YouTube channel. Now it's my problem. Now I have to draw backgrounds and I have to draw gigantic mechanical dragons and fight scenes. Fight scenes I like to draw. But everything else, I was like, oh, curse you, Felix. Curse you, Dingo.
Now, as you mentioned, D&D and role-playing in general obviously is like boundless imagination, but also a fair amount of chaos. It's following where everybody is going while hopefully working somewhat within the bounds of these stories. But when you're getting to here, you got to whittle it down. You got to hone it and focus it and craft it into something that makes sense as a narrative. I'm just repeating what you already said, but what's... I almost hesitate to say, like, what do you prefer here? Because they're two totally different things. But what do you see as the difference in terms of engaging with it as a player versus, say, from the perspective of a creator or as a reader?
So as in, like, the question is, like, how is it different from when you make it to just kind of absorbing it?
I guess, like, how are you you're interacting with it differently, right? Like, when you're playing, that is a much more, I think, active thing than when you're crafting and creating. Like, obviously it's active on both ends on your end, but what's the difference in your mind in terms of the creative process?
Hindsight. When you're in the moment, you can't really see where the path is going. The only one who knows what's going to happen is Felix. And everybody else just kind of has to, like, roll along for the ride. But when you get to go around the bend two or three more times, then you get to lay in foreshadowing and cookie crumbs, and you get to look a little bit closer at why characters were reacting the way they were. So you get the benefit of hindsight to kind of remold the story and polish it and strengthen the plot lines and the characters, taking it from silly improv to, and hee-hee moment decisions to, like, no, I think this is, I see why it was important for the character to do this.
And I know in the past we've also kind of described it as, like, stages of refinement, where we had, like, this was the actual, like, D&D campaign, that's, like, the rough draft. And
that's
then
rough.
No problems whatsoever. None at all.
Wow,
and
wow, wow.
And then, of course, she took it and made it into an animated YouTube series, which was already a lot of decisions of, like, streamlining, what's really important, what are the characters actually about, adding some foreshadowing to events that we at the time couldn't have known.
Getting rid of things that just didn't fit, and I was like, this is never going to come up, so I'm getting rid of it. You know? It happened, but nobody has to know.
And then with the graphic novel, it almost feels like the final level of polish, because we've got, like, this nice balance now of, like, this is streamlined, we did trim the fat, but also we were able to expand on the world a little bit, on something that maybe in a video wouldn't be enough time to do, and also expand on the characters and their backstories a bit more.
Yeah.
Cool. What I love about this graphic novel especially is that you do incorporate the game elements, and it feels like it has that, you're in the moment creatively and playing, sort of watching the game being played, being drawn into it over the course of reading it. But I feel like a lot of other sort of RPG-based stories remove the game element when they translate to a comic book, a graphic novel. What made you want to keep that? Because I think it really works, but it must have felt like a little bit of a risk. And from a developmental point of view, you would normally be like, other people have been like, let's make this into, like, a fantasy story that then we can make into a movie or something.
I mean, the decision for us was that it was just really fun. And It also has to do with the series, because the series has a lot of that in there too. Like, I jump in, he jumps in, like, you know, my friends jump in, where I like to incorporate that a bit. But with Chris, like, Chris actually really pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, no, I really want this, because other comic books, like you were saying, they kind of loosely touch on it a bit sometimes.
If at all.
If at all. And, but he was like, no, they could go harder, but in a balance that it doesn't feel intrusive. Because that was the big thing I was worried about, is, like, if you have a serious moment and you want those characters to live in that moment, you don't want a Looney Tunes character group being like, that's sad, right? Like, you don't want something like that. Like, you know how to balance it. It's that dramedy. How to balance dramedy.
Elmer Fudd's dangerous, right? This gun? Anybody else seeing this?
Yeah, anybody seeing that?
It's one of those elements that it's there, and then when it's gone, you, like, there's moments where we lean into it. We lean into the, actually, the Looney Tunes, the Animaniacs of it. Our avatars in the book can interact and stretch and jump in and out of panels. Felix, in fact, like, steals some NPC's outfits at some point so he can insert himself into some of the action scenes. But then Dingo's right, it heightens some of the drama when suddenly, like, we aren't there anymore, and it's just the characters experiencing things purely. And then we lean into it really hard in one section of the book called the Pick Your Own Side Quest, where the reader actually gets to interact with the book in a D&D style, where you get to roll dice and then choose which path you want to go on based off of your dice roll and actually influence a NPC's journey through the story.
That's awesome. That's
awesome.
Since your book is out today, I always like to ask this. Have you done anything for your book's birthday? Have you gone to the store, checked it out, sort of like done like a little bit of a drive-by or anything like that?
We did. We planned to have like just like, let's, you know, celebrate with some food. We always tend to celebrate with food. But also we went to the bookstore today. We're like, oh, we're going to go check out the copy on the shelf. And they were already sold out.
Shouts.
Good, it's bad.
Like, it's really awesome, but I kind of really wanted to see
it.
Did you ask them? Were you like, hey, do you have any copies of this? And like, no, we're sold out. And you're like, that's my book.
We didn't do the second part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We have another shipment coming, they were saying. So it's like, oh, it's in transit. It's already coming. Yeah. So it's like,
yeah.
Great. Yeah, but today's been a lot of just interacting with fans, and people are posting pictures of like, hey, I got my book.
Yeah.
And it's been so exciting
to
see people's reactions. And also for them to finally being able to read it after it's been like 2 years in the making. You're like, now we can actually get this into people's hands and get their reactions.
Just awesome. Before we start to wrap up here, obviously this is talking about past stories, but since this is an ongoing property at the same time, do you think having a graphic novel and knowing that exists and there's a possibility of a second one or a third one or anything, is that impacting your process going forward with the game, with the YouTube channel?
Not particularly.
Not much, because our mantra is we follow the fun. So we are already making mantra. New stories. Like we have a podcast called Fool's Gold Sands, where we're making another campaign right now that will likely become a comic or graphic novel at some point.
Or something. We'll figure out.
And likely another new campaign setting.
Yeah.
Just cranking these out. I love it.
Yeah. But we can confirm there's actually two books. There's two graphic novels, and the second graphic novel is fully in production.
Oh wow.
Hoping almost done. Yeah, I'm inking the last chapter currently.
Ooh, awesome.
Wow. Then we're hoping for book three somewhere down the line.
And onwards. Yeah.
And onwards.
But we want to make sure that it stays nice and organic. We don't want it to be like become a too formal of a fantasy story, and we don't want to be all like commercialized, I guess.
No, well, the thing is that I got here with poor grammar, and I'm going to keep going with poor grammar.
Don't stop now. And never stop.
Yeah. No, this is not Lord of the Rings. This is Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah, love it. Much prefer that. God, awesome. Congratulations to all of you on the book. Congratulations on your book coming out, and looking forward to the rest of them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, guys. Yes. Good luck.
Thank you for having us.
Bye. Have a great night. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Fool's Gold, Death by Karaoke, and it is out today from Gallery 13.
So cool.
You can get it in stores everywhere, unless it's sold out, in which case...
Probably is. Probably
the
is.
Curse
probably
of popularity. Is.
Yeah.
You know? The curse of popularity.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Why don't we bring in our next group of guests? They are two guys behind The Magical, which is going to be hitting Zoop very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Morales and there we go, Todd Harris.
Hey,
hello,
welcome.
What's up, guys?
Hello. Hello.
How
are
you doing?
Very excited to talk about this project, which has an awesome, like, very strong premise behind it. I'm gonna mangle it a little bit, but basically, two guys tied together by magic across time, World War II. Lot of things going on here. Again, I'm like giving the vaguest possible thing because I don't know how much you want to spoil or talk about, but can you give an idea about the premise and just how you got together for this project?
I know you did better than us, so there you go.
Oh, yeah, I definitely did not. I definitely did not.
You want to go, Todd, or?
I mean, the premise is, it's at its core, it's a very like old school Amblin kind of a premise where regular people kind of get launched in extraordinary situations. Right. Unlike with most things, though, we find out one of the people in this thing, all he wants to do is be ordinary, and he's extraordinary and gets pushed into even crazier situations. But it's a fish out of water story in a lot of different ways. It's an American soldier fighting in Europe, meets and befriends a white guy, and these are two best friends. One for the with the British military, one with the American military, and they end up befriending each other. And the kind of crux of it is that one of them is a very industrious businessman. The other one is a magician, and so they kind of join forces to kind of create opportunities for themselves here. And those opportunities welcome danger from dark forces that we all are kind of aware of that were starting to build themselves up during the 1930s.
Yeah, I love
that. That was really well done. Wow.
Yeah, nailed it. You guys are working on this.
Almost as good as me. It was close.
Almost. Take it easy.
Alex, boosting it up. I did want to talk, you mentioned the setting, and I feel like it's such a specific, you don't see a lot of stories set in the aftermath of World War One. Can you talk about just like putting it there and why you wanted to sort of have that be the starting point?
Well, I'm like an amateur historian guy, and you're right. There's not really much, not many movies about World War One.
Yeah,
because more World War Two is the one really. You got America, you have the Civil War movies and the World War Two movies, and I always got interested in World War One because, honestly, unless I have like an hour, I can't even explain why it really started. It's so complicated. So it was just fun to like sort of do something in that era and go from there.
Cool. Well, given that you are a history buff, how do you make sure that you're balancing historical accuracy and something that feeds that part of you while still making it a fun, action-y, magical book?
Well, you kind of just come up with a story, and then you try and retrofit everything in it so it sounds like period accurate, and the dress and the outfits and everything. But the story's the story. I mean, it's an action-adventure thing, really, at the end of the day. That's going to go on for, at least in the first couple of books, the course of 20 years, and goes further after that.
Wow.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about your collaboration, how the two of you work together and while you're putting this together? Like, what's the back and forth like?
It started off with me just happily being a fan at Comic-Con, and I was five pages off of him, and we would chat. And I usually don't tell anybody I'm an artist when I'm at Comic-Con. I just like to enjoy the show. And my buddy said, "Hey, did you show him your work?" And I was like, "No." And then Mark was like, "Hey, you're an artist?" And I said, "Yeah."
And for you people who don't know, Todd has worked on like all the John Wick movies.
Yeah.
Marvel stuff. All the Marvel movies since like, what, Age of Ultron, at least?
It's been a while.
He did like.
So you're deep undercover at Comic-Con.
Yeah, he did one of the best parts of the Sinners movie that just came out recently. He had an animated show.
Really?
Coming up. The whole musical. What? Scene in the.
Oh, that's crazy.
Todd, all that stuff.
Todd, that's one of the best things I've ever seen.
It's so good.
Well, listen, I'm just there. I'm just there trying to support Ryan.
Did a hell of a job.
Yeah.
So modest. I appreciate how modest you're being, but that really
it's
is
shocking.
Like, yes.
You're undercover right now. You're still undercover.
He's on Disney Plus the next couple of weeks, and he's not even mentioning that. Jeez.
So, there's going to be some announcements. So, for the fans here, keep an eye out for Eyes of Wakanda. It'll be dropping pretty soon.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, nice. Great. Very
exciting. So,
can't wait.
But going back to how we met, so, my buddy. My buddy introduced, he sold me out and blew my cover. And then it's like, and Mark, being the sweetheart of a guy, is like, "Show me your stuff." And then he gave me the most hilarious response I've ever seen.
Yeah, of course. You're like, oh, yeah. This guy's an artist.
He looked at his work and he started looking at a page or two. He's like, "Oh, thank God you're good." So we decide, we met up, we see each other every year or so. And then he hit me up. He's like, "Hey, would you be interested in doing a project?" And I'm like, "Dude, you know everybody in comic books. Why would you talk to me?" And he has a very character-driven story with action. And I have to do a lot of facial expressions for my job. So that's how the collaboration kind of started. And we're like, "Yeah, let's do a comic book in our spare time." And then we quickly realized neither of us had
no spare time.
Yeah, it was
good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I fleshed out the story with my friend, Abeta, who's not here tonight. We started it. I don't even want to say when we started, like 2018, I think, pre-COVID.
Oh,
and everybody just started getting busy. I mean, he's, like I said, he's working on every movie. I've been working on a lot of stuff. Abeta's working on a lot of stuff. So it's hard to do a creator-owned book when you have bills to pay. So,
right.
You know.
Right. So was it like a slow build, or was it finally like, okay, let's do this, and just like dove in on it.
It's just slow. Everything's slow.
Yeah. Part of it was I was just happy to have Mark ink my work, because that was just such a novelty for me. And I was like a 2.5-year-old kid where he got a toy back every time he show me a page. So basically, I'm just doing all this for the swag.
Yeah, quit buying pages. Make them with him.
Yeah,
get it exactly.
Now, it seems like you guys are doing a little bit of pretty much everything on this project, from development to writing to art, etc. Like, Mark, certainly, I know you from your art background, I think, more mm-hmm. than that, but I'd love to get your perspective on how the industry is changing, if at all, in terms of allowances for artists to segue into writing on their own work.
Well, it's a weird thing. I mean, I'm an old dude. So I was around during the 80s and 90s, like the pre-Image days to the Image days, when all the artists were basically writing their own stuff. And even before that, you know, you had Walt Simonson and Frank Miller and all those guys writing their own stuff. And it seemed like, at least in the mainstream Marvel DC thing, they kind of didn't want that to happen anymore, because it makes sense that, you know, you build up somebody working on the X-Men or Spider-Man, and then they bail out and do their own thing, leaving you holding the bag, kind of. So, I mean, it seems like the last 20 years, they really, actually, you know, like in the early 2000s, they really kind of tamped down on that. But it seems like with the rebirth of Image and all that sort of stuff, and a lot of creator-owned stuff out there, it seems like it's becoming, again, a more of a writer-artist type of thing, you know, where everybody's doing a bit of everything now. And so, I mean, but it's like, in comics, it's cyclical. Everything, you know, ebbs and flows, really, I think.
Go ahead,
Tom. No, I was going to say, just, you know, all you guys here working on social media, this is the era of putting out your own shingle. So it's the
easiest time to ever get your thing noticed, certainly, you know?
How do you feel that feeds you creatively, Mark? Just do you, again, knowing you as an artist for a long time, do you feel like getting to write and getting to craft your own property, does that push you in different directions? Does it feed back to the art? How does it work for you?
Yeah, just today, actually, I was one of the judges on the Ringo Awards. Award show they give out, the awards they go out to Baltimore Comic Con. So they sent us literally every single book that came out in 2024. 673 books.
Wow.
And over the course of the last 6 months, I've been going through them, and I finished the last one last night. And
oh my god!
Now, when it started, it was terrible, because I got the first batch I got were just terrible, terrible. But then it really picked up, and I would say that I'd say a good percentage of them were really good to super excellent books, which it's great, because again, I'm old. I mean, I remember when it was like Marvel, DC, and a couple other companies, Archie, and a couple other companies. Now it's like every genre of book you could think of from every company with different styles. I mean, stuff that would never have even appeared in America, at least over the last 30, 40 years, is just there now. And just looking at that makes you feel creative. It's like any story you think that you have that, there's not an audience for that. Well, maybe there is, you know? So it's better to put it out there and just see what happens with it, because anybody can have an idea. It's a matter of putting it out to actually make something of it, you know?
Todd, for you, you obviously are a comic book fan and into it and know the genre and the art and everything, but what's different for you in terms of creating your own comic versus what you have been doing, which is animation, which is movies, TV shows, etc.?
Well, I was a comic book guy before I was a movie guy. Okay. So not working, you know, ambitiously. I did a lot of amateur stuff, but I've done work for Marvel and Dark Horse, things of that stuff nature. But
then you wanted to get real money in movies.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it's I've been a comic person for, you know, it's part of the thing that made me want to draw. So any opportunities, because comic books offer a level of purity. And the collaboration is small, and the final result is more honest to what your initial intent was. So that's it's the best opportunity for that, and it's like one of the few options that artists have to like create a complete piece of work that can turn into other things and be, or just be a complete artwork in of itself. The best part was Mark hit me up, and I'm like, oh great. you're going to take all the responsibility. And so he's been a fantastic collaborator because he would shepherd me through all these. And, you know, he would hit me up, you know, he'd collaborate as much. And but he would just take the reins, like, don't worry, I'm going to write this up or fix that or some dialogue issues. I'm like, you're an expert at it. I just love having someone, because I'm always usually the comic book expert in the situation. And Mark blows my chops out the water. So it's just like, it's like when a college professor meets.
Things that I have.
Well, it's like a college professor meeting a nuclear, a NASA physicist. You're like, well, yeah, I teach kids, but this guy actually launches ships. And so, so it was a fantastic, it was just a fantastic thing to be a part of and watch Mark work. And like, and also to just make me look good with the beautiful inks.
I feel like there's a cliche that was really big like 10 years ago, say that like, well, comics, you know, they're just storyboards for movies. And I feel like we've moved out of that and people are starting to just find that as stupid as it was back then. But as someone who works across all of these mediums, can you talk about how they are actually quite different?
It's that's like saying, it's like when people say the novel was better than a movie.
Yeah.
And it's because the novel spent the entire time in someone's head.
Right.
So storyboards are as different from comics as movies are different from books. So, you know, and as, cause I, you know, you get plenty of people who are like, I wrote this screenplay. I want to make it a comic book and all the things they put that like tone, all, they, you have to have a much more focused, sense of story, especially with American comic books. It's like a highlight reel of a story. So, mm-hmm. And the idea that it's storyboards to someone is their brain making this psychological leap to fill in all these in-betweens from this highlight reel of a story. So I see how they emotionally got there. But if mm-hmm. the writing on the wall is comic books are there to sell drama. And so when you go to storyboards, it is clarity, 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 and transition getting you to the next moment or second. That's more important than just having an image you can go, damn, I want my imagination to crawl all over that. And so so it is a really big difference. And I've seen people who come from comics that go go into animation and see the struggle, you know, learning that, and vice versa, because I've seen storyboard artists go into comics and struggle with the dramatic aspect because their storytelling is so clear, but the sense of like
grandeur,
over embellishing, and just making something.
I mean, like a
where,
splash page, a Jack Kirby splash page in a comic book is something you can sit there and linger on and look at for a long time. Whereas in a movie, it might be a cool shot, but it's a cool shot. It moves along.
Yeah, you can't sit there.
You know, you can't sit there and like, drool over it.
I want to steal a question from Pete in case he wasn't going to ask it. But Todd, I noticed that there are some comic pages, it looks like, behind you. Can you tell us what you got going on there?
Got.
Yeah, point out some highlights you got behind you there.
Well, I got one of Jim Cheung. That one is from New Avengers. It got Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy was a great example of someone to have because I got that when he was trying to buy a house, so it was like buy one page, get another one free.
timing.
And then these are ones I liberated from Mark.
Nice.
Wow.
Does Mark know this? Is he finding out for the first time right now?
He liberated with money.
Okay. All right. That kind of liberating.
Yeah, you know, it's like going hunting in the grocery store. so this is from Thor, the mighty Thor, Oliver Poipiel, Olivier Poipiel. And Mark, and then this one is from ABX. The same team.
That's
so
awesome.
Mark, I, some artwork, I could bring out a book of them right here.
There we go. I heard you digging. What do you got?
Yeah.
Oh, what do I have? Let's see.
Look at this.
It'll be the end of it.
Oh, Han and Chewie.
Well, there you go.
That looks like an easy page to draw.
Yeah, it looks
exactly.
Oh my god. Is that Thanos in the other page?
Thanos getting hit by Thor.
Wow.
Ed McGuinness stuff. Let's see.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
Crisp.
Spidey in Times Square there swinging around.
Yeah.
Wow, Pete, you should see Times Square, Pete.
You just happen to be in the room where I keep all the artwork, so.
Well, that's good.
Get some on the wall.
Oh!
We don't think he has enough wall.
That's Blade, baby. Come on, and Black Panther. Oh,
this is good for our audio podcast too. I think they probably
yes, really enjoying this. Yeah.
Just imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Oh wow, Scarlet Witch. Very cool. Yeah. Oh my God, amazing.
These are great.
Invincible.
So
wow.
But yeah, I could do that all day though. That's another podcast.
Yes. Yeah, so well,
you're unbelievably talented. Yeah, it's fun to look at.
Todd, I do want to ask you, just because it came up, about Eyes of Wakanda, because it does look so awesome. And you were showrunner, I believe, and directed one of the episodes, yes. And I assume did other jobs as well.
Yeah, I directed a little bit more than half of the episodes.
Oh, awesome.
Wow.
It was a project I pitched a few years ago, and before Marvel had an animated division, and it was one of those things. I pitched, I think I was working on Infinity War, and I pitched it to Kevin, and I pitched it, and then I jumped over to Black Panther and I pitched it to Ryan, and I just assumed, listen, I think it's a great idea, and it's something I think would be a good companion piece for the Black Panther movies, because you know, nothing makes the king look better than having amazing lieutenants. We're like, well, if they're this dope, what's the king about? So it's kind of much like this piece. It's a meditation on history, and it's they're basically espionage stories, but it's also about how Wakanda interacts with history, and what kind of impact they have. But it was an idea I pitched, and I guess it resonated because when the animation division was starting to grow, they were like, "Hey, you still have that pitch?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do," and developed it on up, and here we are.
That's awesome.
Congratulations. Well, I do want to wrap it back around to the magical before we start to wrap up here. This is right now on a pre-launch page on Zoop. Mm-hmm. When it does launch at some
next
point.
Next Tuesday.
There it is. What can people expect when they sign up, when they pledge the Zoop?
Hopefully an entertaining book. It's book one of two or three. We have the second one pretty much done. So the first one, one of the reasons we waited too was that we both knew that our schedules are terrible. So we wanted to make sure that the book was actually done before we even thought of submitting it for publishing, because I've supported other books in the past and they don't come out, and you feel like you got ripped off somehow. So showing artwork, I'll show you the cover. We just got one from Todd.
So let's see if we that's awesome. Nice.
And then, if I can find it, one from the great Kari Randolph.
Ooh. Oh, awesome.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Look at
that's
that.
That's nice.
Really cool.
And we're working on getting one right now from my old friend Ed McGuinness. So
very nice.
We'll have a couple of variants for all the collectors out there, and some, you know, specialty stuff and awards and, you know, remarks and all sort of stuff. But hopefully you'll like the book just for the story. We put a lot of work into it. I think it's pretty good.
It sounds awesome.
It's got buddy comedy. It's got workplace comedy. It's got military comedy.
We have Nazis in reality as well.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We're not looking for that audience.
I'll take their money.
It's got tons of magic, tons of action, military grade action, magical grade action, and humor. So it's all the fun stuff for us. It's because we're both fans of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. A lot of twists and turns.
I'm glad, Todd, I'm glad you talked to Mark finally at Comic-Con. I'm glad this worked
beautiful
out.
Beautiful meet cute, guys. Yeah. Yes. Really nice.
And very excited to see
this. It's the next romantic
book.
Comedy, yes.
Yes.
Without the romance.
Awesome. Yeah. Good luck next Tuesday and throughout the month with the Zoop. Sounds great. Very excited to check it out.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Can't wait to read it.
All right.
See you guys.
All right. There we go. Oop. I did not properly remove Mark. Okay, there we go. I figured it out. You can check it out. It's The Magical on Zoop. Again, there's a pre-launch page that's up right now, so you can sign up, and they'll let you know as soon as it goes live next Tuesday. And we have one last guest for you this evening. Woo-hoo! He is one of the guys behind Invasion from Planet Wrestletopia, as well as the new Deadpool VR game. Ladies and gentlemen, Ed Kunal. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for waiting. I'm happy to go on last, but I feel like the quality of guests just fell off the cliff.
Come on, get out of here. You're the closer, Ed.
That's right. It's a high leverage situation.
Yes.
Close you guys out.
Well, let's talk about everything you're working on. First of all, I want to start on something, and I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, but I do think it's interesting for people to hear. We were talking on email for a while, and this is entirely my bad. I missed the Kickstarter you had.
You didn't miss much.
Well, and this is what I want to talk about, is like, you put up a Kickstarter. We have Kickstarter campaigns on here a lot, and it's always talking about, like, are you going to make it? Did they make it, etc.? You didn't make it. Like, you did not make it on the Kickstarter.
No, we failed. We have two failed Kickstarters so far. We have no social media following whatsoever. Right. And that turns out that's a problem. And you probably shouldn't order a print run of 2,000 trade paperbacks and in hopes that you can sell them quickly online. Because, it wasn't totally unexpected. What happened was we put out the Invasion Planet Wrestletopia first as a 6-issue series, and we did it digitally, right? Mm-hmm. And we got a great response from the book, from critics and a wrestling podcast and comic book podcast, all kinds of all people. We got great reviews. Turns out it doesn't translate so well into sales necessarily. It doesn't. So we're out there just kind of hustling, getting the book out. Now we have it in print. It's a beautiful book. We had
it looks great.
We had Dan Scotti was the first artist that we worked with. He's done a lot of work with Dark Horse and the Big Two, I think, and ended up with Kendall Good, another phenomenal artist. But everyone was a professional comic book artist that we worked with, and we ended up with a beautiful book. We're extremely happy with it. Like I said, it got a good response, and now I'm trying to make that sort of get into that monkey paw situation where I can be cursed with popularity as a result. And that's why I'm here. Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Nice. Well, we hope we can help.
Can you give the pitch for the book? Because I think
So Invasion Planet Wrestletopia, and here you can see Rock and Roll Rory Landell. He is a disgruntled pro wrestler, and he gets screwed out of the world belt by an unscrupulous promoter. So he gets pissed, and he does a live interview where he says, like, I don't care about the world title. It means nothing to me. I'm the galactic champion of the universe, brother. Of course, the TV signal goes into outer space. 15 years later, is intercepted by Planet Wrestletopia. They're not happy because they have their own galactic champion. Earth is subsequently enclosed in a giant steel cage.
Love the steel cage. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock and roll Rory. So Earth's last best hope is this washed up train wreck of a human being, this pro wrestler who's kind of living off the grid. And he's given this ultimatum, 72 hours, you better show up at the Sportatorium, brother, and we're going to do a title unification bout, galactic champion versus galactic champion. If you don't show up, we're going to pummel Earth into submission. Well, then Rory has this, he has this physical journey to get to the match on time, and he has like his own journey where he has to sort of like sort out, stop being such a head case. And there's a lot of like backstabbing and treachery going on, like every good wrestling angle, right? And that's the Invasion from Planet Wrestletopia.
I love the bigness and the sort of flashiness of the story. It feels captures the tone of wrestling, of pro wrestling. How did you like what went into the development of this story? Or were you like directly trying to translate that to a larger intergalactic stage?
I was obsessed with wrestling like as a kid. Like I started watching like this when I was like, I don't know, not 8 or 9. I thought it was real, like totally, like non choreographed and non scripted, And but much later in life, when I got into video games and I'm a writer, and some point in the late 2000s, I was, you know, tossing ideas back and forth with my co-writer, and I just got this idea of a wrestler who cut a promo, declared himself Galactic Champion of the Universe, and that that would cause some serious problems. And so my co-writer, Matt Enten, and I, we really just like fell in love with the story. And we just, I just realized, like, I want this to exist in the world. If you write like a screenplay or something, nobody cares. Like, nobody has to read. Like, nobody has to read it. But a comic book is this living, breathing thing. You can self-publish at the very least. You can put it into the world. And so that was our motivation. And I told Matt at the time, I'm like, you know, if no one pays attention to it, at least we'll have. I'll be happy. I'll be happy if we finish it, put it out there. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how literal I was being at the time when I said that. I said that. I think that was the yeah. So and you know, we're out there with the book. It's going all right. We're in 25 comic book stores in the Pacific Northwest. That's great. Which has been fun. And we want to get the book out there because we want to do more stories like this. We just don't want to. We just don't have. Our wives have been patient enough with the money. We need to sell some books first before we start making something else.
Yeah. It's such a funny thing because, like, you have to make the thing to get the social media following, but you need the social media following to sell the thing. So it's total catch-22.
It's a real interesting thing. We're out there now on more socials than we've ever had been before. And, I don't just don't know the trick to it at all. My kids try to help me, and I listen, but it is fulfilling. Like I said, we got a great response from it. One of the joys has been driving to comic book stores in Portland and Seattle and Tacoma area and talking to comic book store owners and checking out all these stores and seeing their response to the book, which has been really great. Yeah, we're just you know, really, really, really proud of it. You know, regardless of what happens. Now, that being said, if people are interested in Invasion of Planet WrestleTopia, they can go to our website, and from there they can buy the book from us or figure out all different kinds of platforms to get it digitally or in print. And it has been a fun ride so far.
I do want to swerve a little bit and ask you about what I assume is your day job, because you've been writing on video games for a while, but one of the new ones that's coming up is you wrote or co-wrote the Deadpool VR game that's coming to Meta platforms. I legitimately have no idea how you write a video game in general, but, like, what is different about writing a VR game? I have to assume there are other problems inherent there.
It's funny in that, you know, sometimes when you're writing for games, like, the platform itself is different enough that it really alters or changes the game plan. With virtual reality, it's not so much. The same rules still apply. The player has, what makes games different is the player has choice. Mm-hmm. The player can affect things, and you have no idea what the hell the player is going. The player's never going to do what you want them to do. Like, they're never going to be looking at what you want them to look at. Like, so you need to account for all of that when you're writing for video games. But for Deadpool, what was just a lot of fun about it is, of course, he's, you know, we all know what Deadpool's like, you know, he's constant quips and all that stuff. And so we're just writing like thousands and thousands and thousands of one-liners for every situation.
How do you break the fourth wall when there really isn't a fourth wall?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you know, there's lots of times where he'll sit there and talk about, like, you know, sales of the game or, like, you know, his contract or, you know, I think he mentions, you know, Zuck a few times and this and that. That was really, really fun. It was a really unique project. I've worked on, I want to say, almost 90 video games thus far in my life. And the studio behind Deadpool is called Twisted Pixel Games. And you may have heard of them before. They made Comic Jumper, Loco Cycle, all kinds of the Gunstringer, all kinds of just, they're very irreverent, very different, unique stuff. I love working for them, and they, I think, were probably the perfect developer for the for a Deadpool game. Mm-hmm. And I think fans are going to be really, really, you know, fans, I think, are going to be really pleased with the end result.
Now, awesome. Neil Patrick Harris is doing the voice of Deadpool, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
When you have somebody of that caliber come in, do they start giving notes? Is there any back and forth? Or are you here's my script, moving it on?
Did you write Doogie Howser jokes right. in for him? Or?
I don't think we knew quite who would take that job until the very bitter end. So I hope I hope somebody snuck in a few. So they, first of all, they won't let someone like me anywhere near the talent, which is which is a smart idea. But the creative director at Twisted Pixel Games, Josh Baer, he's actually done a lot of this. He's directed a lot of like Hollywood celebrities, and he has experience. And most of this stuff is done, it's in the can, and then Neil Patrick Harris is hired, and then you're going into recording. So I can't imagine. You know, I'm sure he's doing plenty of improv, but it was actually a massive amount of stuff to be recorded, in my opinion, for him. So I imagine he's just, you know, just trying to get through this massive amount of material, for something like this, there's not too much time for input or things like that. From in video games in general, when you get these actors in there, they're reading from a script, often without a lot of context, and it's not like film where there's a lot of back and forth. There's also the fact that so many gameplay and art assets have been committed that if someone like an actor were to have a great idea for something, like, well, that's cool, but no, we spent 6 months building this level. And it's not changing.
And plus, I would imagine your job is to just give a mass of product. And then, because Matt is going to come in and be like, well, you can't say that. You can't say that. So, like, it's always, everything's getting cut back as the process
it's kind of like the PSYOP, the KGB PSYOP, where there's so much information you can't possibly ever go through. The lawyers can't get through it all in time.
Yes. It's just,
right. But
in my experience, they find a way to get through it.
They're using AI now. I know that Twisted Pixels had some, I think, interesting conversations with Meta's in-house counsel, but thankfully I don't have to be involved with any of that stuff.
Does it change? I kind of imagine the answer is no, but I'm going to ask anyway. Does it change the comedy at all when you're writing for a VR headset that is just one person alone? Like, obviously, video games are mostly a solo thing most of the time, but this is definitively only that person is going to experience that.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like Deadpool is your tour guide through this virtual world, and you can't get away from him, which is nice. He's always talking in your ear. Other characters, obviously, there's you know, it's been announced, like, Mojo is the primary antagonist of the game. There are, but you're right. There's not a whole lot in the way of, like, traditional game cinemas where we can command your attention. Or want to command your attention, so it's really like you and Deadpool. Thankfully, Deadpool never shuts up.
Yeah,
right. And so he's kind of like the perfect VR companion for the player. So yeah, it really is like. There's lots of, we talked about breaking the fourth wall. There's a lot of times where Deadpool's like talking to the player and making fun of the player or trying to bribe the player to do one thing or another. So it was kind of unique in that sense, where it's I don't think I've worked on a game where it's basically like I'm in your ear and I can play with that constantly.
It's really interesting from Deadpool in the comic book form and in the movies, like he's talking from the comic book to us.
Right.
When this is actually, you're pulling the viewer, the player into the game. So it's it's like the flip of the Deadpool relationship.
It's interesting. Yeah, like we're kind of in his world.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
That's the immersive. I worked on a comedy show that we did for Meta, so that was
in the headset. Okay.
And it was like so hard to get everyone to understand.
Yeah.
They're going to look at you, but they're also going to look at other stuff. So, you can't just not be doing something. Yeah, exactly.
You can comment on things in the world, but you really can't count on the player actually
exactly
paying attention when you want to pay attention. In fact, there's a lot of stuff in there that's like, hey, yo, dude.
Yeah, right.
Please just press this goddamn button so we can get yeah. And what's also nice about Deadpool, you spend a lot of time in video games wanting sometimes to guide the player, but not break the fourth wall, whereas Deadpool will be like, dude, just press the button.
That's really funny. That's so fun.
You're killing me here. Just, we got to move on. You know, it was a lot of fun.
We got a question here. It's a basic one, but from Straight Bullet, is there a release date for this game?
Oh, boy. You think they would tell me, huh? I have heard... I'm going to Google it here. Like
we're all Googling it.
Like, he can't do it himself. But I want to say that I heard October. Now, okay. It could have changed a little bit. I do. They're wrapping up with some voice. Or most of the voiceover has been recorded, but they are still wrapping up some. I think October still sounds realistic to me. But yeah.
Now, when a game that you've worked on comes out, do you play it, or are you so sick after writing 40,000 jokes that you just are like,
I started in games in the early 2000s, and I remember working on like my first game, and I asked somebody that question, and then an artist, and he's like, "You will never play this game. you will buy it. You will stick it on your wall, and because you've played everything." In this case, there's like four different writers on this game, and I haven't heard everything. I'll probably make an exception for Deadpool, but it is like by the time you're done playtesting and recording the voiceover, you really want to move on and do something else like desperately.
Yeah. Well, since that is done, what is next on the docket for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I have got a smaller project coming out called by BitPlanet Games called RC Racer, and it's a pretty cool concept in which you are virtually playing a person who's virtually controlling a race car.
That's cool.
And I don't know if I got sucked into this world, but there's a huge subculture of remote control car racing, professional racing. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure when that's coming out, but it's BitPlanet Games, and and then hopefully I'm hoping for another, project role with Meta for another big project, but otherwise it's that, and just trying to get the word out on Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia, and
get WrestleTopia out there.
Get it
really
out there.
Fun book.
And again, to plug that part of it, so you said there's 25 comic book stores, so potentially if your local comic shop wants to get it, they can order it.
Please reach out to me and I will get those books out there somehow. I live in Portland, so I did like a massive road trip all over the Portland area, Tacoma, Seattle. The 25 stores, they're on our website, so if you happen to, if you are in the Portland or Seattle, Tacoma area, you might find your local on our list. And
that's awesome.
That would be, yeah. But
and,
I will
send and you're meeting up with a lot of Steelers fans out there? What's happening? What's happening?
My youngest kid, so we're Seahawks. I thought we were a Seahawks household.
Yeah. You've been betrayed. You've been betrayed.
The youngest boy loves the Steelers. My oldest loves the Bears.
Mm. Wow.
And, I don't know how it happened. And I'm a Green Bay Packers season ticket holder.
Holy shit. What a mess.
Yeah. We're all screwed up.
That's really funny.
Awesome. Awesome. Ed, good luck with that.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah.
Have a great night.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Ed, the work's great. Have a good one.
All right, there we go. Once again, you can check out Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia. Check out the website. Let Ed know you want it. Let your local comic shop know that they got to order like 2,000 copies or something like that and get it going. And Deadpool VR, as mentioned, should hopefully be out by the end of this year.
He dropped a website in the private chat, suspiciousbehaviorproductions.com. I will drop it in the comments here.
Nice.
And, folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we will read that off. Can be about absolutely anything. And folks, what you drinking? I'll mention Stray Bullet, curated for us, a classic Stray Bullies, old fashioned this week. Sounds that's what I want real right good. Now. Classic. Oh, yes. But what are you guys drinking?
I've got a little hotel water. When you can't drink out of the faucet, try hotel water.
Oh, and Pete still has his fancy beers for fancy men.
Yeah, I got a little Dogfish Head, a little 30-minute IPA.
Holy shit, that's what good. Happened? Did you find a bunch of money somewhere? What happened?
Nope. Did you rob the dude?
Did you get a craft beer roommate or something?
No. I mean, that's a good beer. Yeah. So I'm very happy for you.
Yeah. That's an intense one for you. It's a ride, Pete.
That's a whole meal. That's like a Guinness for anybody else.
Yeah, it's all turning right. Your gray beard brown again, Pete. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, that sounds you're coming, exciting.
Coming wow. to life.
You're going to see a band, I believe, in Williamsburg after 10 p.m. It's crazy. Wow. All right, we got a couple of questions here already. Derek Maynard says, what's your go-to karaoke song?
I don't.
Mine is Jack Daniels at the Bar.
Wow. Three guys who don't like karaoke.
Yeah, I'm a great audience member.
Yep,
I just said this in the comments. I sang What's New Pussycat with some friends when I lived in Boston like 20 years ago. And they still talk about it as like, I can't believe you did that. It shut down the entire bar. And I was like, wow, I ruined karaoke. I do a show called Characters Welcome. And we did a musical month, and I had to do a musical thing. So I did a karaoke character doing Don't Stop Believin'. And everyone was like, you chose the hardest song to do for karaoke? I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't even tell.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Sorry to swerve from that question, Derek. But here we go. I Cry During Sex says, hi, guys. What do you think Marvel could do to bring back the hype for their Star Wars comics? I don't think the quality is significantly dipped or anything, but the interest doesn't seem to be there anymore. Great question.
Great question. Really good question, because I do feel like they've lost their mojo's missing there somehow. It's so true.
Oh, man. Well, they got to do what Austin Powers and Goldmember did then and get their mojo back, baby.
Oh, wow.
Good. That's the answer we all wanted. Wow. I mean, I think one factor is the Star Wars universe in general isn't doing hardly anything. So the comics are fortunately or unfortunately following in their footsteps. I think what the comics could do, and what they are doing, I think, with the comics I've been reading anyway, is they're carving out new territory. But I think the big thing to do would be go hard in a different direction. And who knows what the corporate bosses and editorial, like, I'm sure they can't just do a Rey story, but that would be, I think, the move to get some juice back in the genre.
I think your overall point about Star Wars not being that hot right now is the main thing. And I don't think this is not slagging anybody off, because like the commenter says, I think there's some good stuff coming out. Like the main Star Wars
great
title by Alex
Segarra
is good. I'm glad they're doing a Dr. Aphra book. They're doing some interesting things back in the prequel era even. But people aren't hot on Star Wars. And I don't think they could do something like an Andor that's going to totally rejuvenate and thrill fans, because it's Marvel Comics. Like, they're not going to do something like... If somebody's like, I'm going to do a Star Wars story at Image and I'm going to just really mess shit up, that's something that would get people excited. Or if you did some sort of crazy take that wrecked the continuity, like Jonathan Hickman taking over X-Men and being like, let's really screw shit up here. That's another thing that I think would really work for Marvel, but that's just not going to happen. Yeah. So I don't know. There's no good answer there, unfortunately. Stanley says, do you think the Fantastic Four are interesting or boring characters?
Oh, your mileage may differ.
I can predict who's going to say what here.
Oh. All right, Nostradamus, let us know what's up.
Pete thinks they're boring and doesn't like Reed Richards, right?
Ding,
nailed it. Okay, there we go. Justin thinks they
the way he treats his wife.
Yes, I think they are interesting. I mean, we're about to get so much of this with the movie coming out, but they're the comic book team, or they're the characters that are a family.
Used to be.
So I do think that that makes them inherently interesting, and I think all the ways they've approached that over the years makes them interesting. Like the Hickman run just blew out the universe a lot. The Valeria Doom relationship is one of the most interesting relationships in comics, where the daughter of the heroes becomes close with their arch enemy. That's wild. That's so cool. So they're great characters. It just, like anything, comes down to what are we doing with them. Ryan North's run has been really interesting, I think, because it is focusing on like science and about the family, but pairing them up differently and getting into different aspects. It's a non-traditional Fantastic Four run, I think.
Yeah, and like you said, it depends the same as anything, how safe are people playing it, right? Like, it ties back to the Star Wars thing we were just talking about, but I came in on reading Fantastic Four comics during the John Byrne era, which were insane. Like, those comics were completely off the wall and trying absolutely anything, and so no, that's not boring. That is interesting. Whether it worked or not is a different question, but if you're like, no, they are straightforward family who cares about each other, period. Yes, they're as boring as the people who are like, Captain America is always true and right, and that's all I know about his character. There's lots of things that you could do to challenge people who are like that or push them in different directions. Yeah. Schreckler says, what games, video or tabletop, have you been playing? I can list off a couple of them. My son, for his birthday, got another version of Horrified. This is a tabletop game that is very fun. Nice. You play against these monsters. They had a Universal Monsters version, a Greek Monsters version, American Monsters. Now they have World of Monsters, which is like more steampunk, Cthulhu type thing going on. And basically, you take a certain number of monsters, and the whole goal is it's basically like a mini game. You're playing against each of the monsters in different ways, but they're all trying to kill you at the same time, and you work cooperatively as a team to take them down. Very, very fun games. Highly recommend those. And video game wise, not much right now.
Yeah. I've observed my kids playing a lot of video games. I was out of town. I played two games with some friends last week. One of them was called Hues and Cues, which is a game where you take turns. You get a card with four different colors on it, like very specific colors. And then the game board is like a huge gridded color wash all across Roy G. Biv. And you have to say one word, and people have to put their peg on the actual very specific hue on the board.
So you say pink, and then they gotta...
Well, see, you want to get a little more nuance than that, because the colors are very specific. Like, the one that I hit the hardest on, I said creamsicle. And, everybody nailed the color on the board. See, that beer's too strong for Pete. And the other game we played is a great tabletop game called Asshole, where you drink heavily.
I played that a lot.
Huge in the tabletop world.
Huge. I've been playing a lot of Excite Bike and Tecmo Bolt.
You got to get out of the nostalgia bath. Your skin is so wrinkly, Pete.
Never. Yeah.
Oh, I do want to mention one other one, which isn't exactly a game. It's actually very serious, but I did play it with some friends the other day. I got sent a tarot deck from Insight Editions that is themed around Agatha All Along.
Ooh.
And it is, first of all, it's awesome because all of the cards are like, are not photo scenes, but they are drawn. Somebody drew scenes from the show.
Oh, that's
themed
cool.
Around. So they're beautiful. So I did some tarot for people. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just looking through the book. But it was very fun. It actually ended up being weirdly tense at a certain point. So I was thinking, what if I did your guy's
tarot? Yeah, I was just going to say, we got to do that. One of the wildest times in my life, I was doing a – I'm telling a lot of stories tonight. I'm away from my family. I was out of town at a comedy festival in northern Washington, Bellingham, Washington, and we got around, and one of the performers was a tarot reader. And so we did all of our tarot, and this comedian who we used to have on the show, who I believe Jedi married us, maybe David Cope, he had his tarot read, and it was the most disastrous. He was like, David Cope? Love Life 2016 or whatever year it was. And it was the most ruinous tarot read. The reader was like, I'm sorry, man, but it does not look good for you. Oh, it was so funny. I would love to do that.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely set that up.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It kind of is. I mean, I will say, like, doing it, I don't believe any of this stuff, but doing the tarot, even though I was, like, doing it very gently, you could feel sort of like a thick air settling on the room.
Yes.
There's something very tense about it.
You better start to believe, man, if you're going to read my tarot, bro.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, the good thing about it is we could check up on how it goes as the years go on.
Easy Reader says, are you looking forward to anything in particular at San Diego Comic-Con this year?
I think the comic news specifically around Absolute and Ultimate, I'm excited to hear. I think we're going to get a lot of details about what's coming because they have huge events coming like very soon.
The Hi-Chew table is always my favorite thing about a con.
I mean, you're not going, but they still send you the news. You have an alert set, right?
Yep.
Sweet. I agree on the Marvel and DC stuff. I'm excited to see what they put out there. The movie and TV stuff doesn't seem...
Less exciting.
They're going to be talking about DCKO, which is the new big DC event that's coming out. That is just a 36 superhero brawl to end them all, Mortal Kombat style. So that's fun.
Into that.
And DC is also doing, which is so weird. I don't know why they're doing this, but... They are celebrating 100 years of comics 10 years early. And so they're going to be doing each decade over the course of 1 year for 10 years. So this year, kicking off at San Diego Comic-Con, is celebrating 1935 through 1945. And I'm like, that's a bold plan if you think.
That is crazy.
You're going to be doing this for 10 years. But I don't know. Curious to see how that goes. So we'll see.
That is. Can't wait till they celebrate. The 10 years that they're celebrating in the last year.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's fucked. Yeah. Like, hey, remember when, it's like Pete with nostalgia. It's like, remember when we celebrated the 35 to 45 years? Pretty cool. are we going to get any DC movie announcements?
So they're not doing a DC movie panel. They're not doing a Marvel movie panel, which is particularly surprising for Marvel because they have Fantastic Four coming out this weekend. I assume they'll have some... fan screening or something like that. But they are doing a Peacemaker panel with James Gunn on it, which definitely perked my interest in terms of like something's going to come up, right? Like
has to be an announcement, I think.
Except, so I saw the Creature Commandos panel that he did at New York Comic Con, and there was a speed round towards the end where they were like, got to ask you about these 10 things. And he was like, da-da-da-da-da-da, went through it. I think we're going to get that versus anything formal, because I think he's really good. Like, James Gunn likes to keep it focused on the project he's talking about.
Sure, I agree with that. I just mean he's going to say something that is big news that's the next thing from on the movie side, don't you think?
We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
Feels a little light. Huge success. Gotta be feeling good.
Gotta do something. Clayface, man. Gonna be huge. Pablo DiMartinez says, did you see the FF First Steps LA premiere last night? This is the first 5 minutes of the movie on it. I will say...
Hey, Pablo.
Alex, have you seen the first 5 minutes?
I've seen the first 5 minutes and the subsequent hour and 55 minutes as well.
Oh, man.
I will actually say, without spoiling anything, that's not the first 5 minutes of the movie. They said it was the first 5 minutes, but there's something that happens before that in the
good
movie.
Twist.
The Marvel flip. You're talking about the Marvel flip is like 5 minutes long. It's
no,
really
there's
sweet.
No Marvel flip. I will say on a slightly different thing, and we can talk more about this later or when we talk about this, I watched all of the Fantastic Four movies, and I got to say, Pete,
what?
I miss the Marvel flip.
Oh my god.
At the beginning where they're going through the comics, I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. Maybe Pete knows what he's talking about. Oh geez.
Wow. What a twist. Something happened in last week. You guys have switched half your souls.
So.
Or
we
something.
Got a bunch more questions, so let's James Gunn through these. David Quinley says, I know it's just a movie, but do you think popularity of Superman could have a sea change in our culture more towards the positive?
I was thinking about this. This is a great question. I mean, I don't think it's like we'll see something overnight, but I think a culture that creates more positive things makes for more positive people in a slow burn sort of way. So, yes, I do. It will be a slow tide shift.
Yeah. I think we had the new positivity or the new sincerity people were talking about like 10 years ago or something, and then things became bitter and horrible. So I agree with you. These things go in a cycle. Fingers crossed. Spaceman Frank says, absolute or ultimate universe character storyline you would like to see?
Ooh. Like to see in the comics?
I'd love to see a absolute Wonder Woman team up with an absolute Batman and whoop some ass together. You know what I mean?
Well, I got great news for you.
Yeah?
Probably a year from now, but it's going to happen for sure.
Yay.
Absolute or ultimate?
My first answer was Legion, but we're literally about to get that, sort of, I think, somewhat.
Yeah, you know, I made this as a joke online because he did show up, but Ultimate Howard the Duck, because we don't have, like, a comedy book in the Ultimate line, or the Absolute line, for that matter. So, I don't know, I'd love to see what somebody would take as, like, here's my hard, very fresh, very different take on Howard. I guess. Bad Guy says, just finished reading From Hell by Maureen Campbell, and it kind of blew my mind. Have you guys read it? Favorite Alan Moore comic?
Ooh.
I have read From Hell. I like it. I gotta go. I mean, Swamp Thing is iconic. That's probably the one I revisit the most.
I don't know. Watchmen was such a... I mean, we... Yeah, it's such a cultural moment. I mean, it was such a huge thing of like, do you read comics? What do you think of Watchmen? You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
You know what? The first thing that came to mind, because I was like Pete saying, like, do you say Watchmen? Do you say V for Vendetta? Do you say League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? But I think the thing that I actually have read more and enjoyed more is For the Man Who Has Everything, the Superman story.
Ooh, nice.
I love that. I don't think I've read Whatever Happened to the Man from Tomorrow quite as much, but that story is just great and really just gets to the heart of Superman.
That's a great call, and I have another alt pick. Didn't he do that run on Supreme? I forget how long that was. That was good. That's one I've read a couple times.
Yeah. Question for Pete and Justin. How has it been doing the show without Alex tonight, and do you know where he has vanished to?
No, this is a question referencing something going on the Patreon.
What's up with
Discord? Alex is a ghost, and I think there's a slight delay in reality where he's definitely going to be a ghost in 1 week.
Yes. Well, it's sort of like ghosts, I've always said, are time travelers. Like, that's why we can't see them. They're moving backward and forward in time. So I haven't died yet. Like, the version of me on the Discord is dead. The version would be here. Wait until the end of the show and see what happens.
Oh, this is exciting.
Michael Tillman says, audience question for Pete, Reed Richards or Scott Summers?
Oh, yeah. Both are the worst.
One lives and one dies, Pete.
Yeah, and I would have to pick Reed Richards because at least he's smart.
Wow. Interesting. And one lives and it becomes your craft beer roommate.
Nat Towson, who is really on one about popcorn buckets in our Patreon Discord. The Galactus popcorn bucket is $80. Are people fucking these buckets or what?
Well, that's the whole thing. You got to fuck your bucket, right? I mean, that's the whole... That's why it all started. Yeah.
That's why they put post-credits in. Give you time to fuck your bucket.
Give you time to finish. Yeah, yeah.
Really nice.
Bucket fucking's the new... It's the new thing with movie theaters. You know what I mean? They really... You know, it all started
It started. It didn't start with the Dune 2 popcorn bucket.
It did start with the Dune 2 bucket.
They pre-existed the Dune 2 popcorn bucket, but it exploded from that because everybody was like, you got to fuck that bucket.
Yeah.
And not that we need to get back to there, but I think we've really lost track. Like, Fantastic Four and Superman back-to-back has hit a critical mass for me, being like, who is collecting these collectible popcorn buckets? And furthermore, what room do you have in your house that you are putting all of these used popcorn buckets somewhere? What is going on?
You washing those in your dishwasher and putting them on a little shelf?
You got to.
Yeah, if you get the butter. I don't like those. I barely like the popcorn.
Yeah.
What? You don't like popcorn?
Here's the thing. I get it.
they're like, they're uncomfortable. The Galactus one glows. I don't want to see a glowing Galactus in the middle of watching Fantastic Four. Well,
plus, they're made out of plastic. It's like eating out of the 80s Castle Grayskull. It's disgusting. Oh,
that's a great idea.
It's gross.
What am also, I doing? Also, for the record,
meals out of that.
Also, for the record, very fuckable.
Yeah, man. Grayskull? Really good. Puts you in the mindset. James Edmonds says, my friend buys them and sells them with a very good profit.
That is the only... That is not collecting them, though. That is reselling them to a bunch of idiots who are...
Is he talking about buckets or is he talking about Castle Grayskull?
Great point. Or maybe he's running some sort of sex operation.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's just the popcorn. Maybe he's buying the popcorn buckets, throwing out the popcorn buckets, keeping the popcorn, and reselling that. I mean, that's edible, at least. Yeah. Michael Tillman says, over-under of Pete watching Happy Gilmore 2 five times over the weekend.
Yeah, it's crazy. Everyone knows too much about specifically Pete's life. Like, we're in too deep.
Yeah, I got a real problem because I'm traveling New York City and it's like eating into my watch time, you know?
Oh, nice.
Boy. That's tough for you. How are you feeling, Pete? They started filming Ted Lasso season 4.
Feeling great. You guys were like, are you okay, Pete? And I was like, why wouldn't I be okay? This is all very exciting news.
Well, a lot of what they've been saying on the set is they're cheers in their glasses and saying, we're going to make this one suck hard. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I do want to offer a little retraction on something I just said, because Straight Bullet says, I got the cap shield. That's pretty cool, talking about the popcorn bucket. Here's the thing. I think you get one collectible popcorn bucket. That's it. You can't actually collect them. You can be like, that's cool. And that is what I use for my
How
popcorn.
Dare you? They can collect whatever they want, man.
Where are they getting the room?
Chandler Pickett, dude in my office, has the Galactus on his desk. What a flex.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge flex.
Oh, hey, he's going to get fired any second now. All right.
That's more like a promotion.
Said he'll use it as a trash can.
Wow. This guy's got real wild energy in the office.
Jeez Louise. Where do you work? It's going to turn out Chandler works at an AMC is what's going to happen.
Oh, okay. Good call. Yeah. Nice.
Well, that is it for your audience. Bucket fuckery. You know the bucket fuckery down my block just closed?
No!
I was so upset!
I have a membership there.
I know. Yeah. I'm on the exactly. B list.
Please, no follow-ups at this time.
No, I'm not going to clarify it.
No. We have it in our... It's like... The story between the story, you know?
Oh, my God.
All right, we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Oh, all right. This is the
big,
part we get back to
big
you.
Dead celebrity couple days. I think about you.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been rough. This is the part we get back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you probably want to go to a comic book shop. All right, so all we need is a first hand up, a volunteer, a pick me or something in the comments, and we can get this bad boy underway.
Now, Pete, when a couple celebrities die in a row, is that like when like a mailman has too much mail come in?
Yeah, like, I'm so backed up now. I'm like, please stop dying. I mean, I'm getting, we got stuff today. I was in a meeting. I was like, oh my God. I was like all stressed out. I was like, I can't get all this in.
Cool. All right. Well, Pablo is hand up, guys. So take it away.
All right, Pablo, here we go. It's great to hear from you, Pablo. Today's trivia is about the new Storm comic and a small nod to the legend, Harris Yulin, R.I.P. Bernstein from Scarface. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection.
Can I just suggest to de-stress yourself a little bit? You could probably cut a couple of people.
Make a cut.
You know, guys, this is just adding to my stress. You know what I mean? I don't need these kinds of suggestions, all right? But thank you. Okay, here we go. Question number one. Storm has been a lot of things. A goddess, an X-Men, and a blank, just to name a few. Is it A, a queen, B, I've heard of the Herald of Galactus, but not C, Harold Weed?
Ooh. I think you're the Herald of Weed.
Do they come to your door once a week?
It's Harold Weed, okay? Oh, it's not a Harold. Yeah, geez. Come on, man.
I Harold is beginning.
Pablo, you're correct. A is correct.
Nice.
Here we go. Question number two. Storm has had love interests before, but in the new series, she spends some time with blank. Is it A, Forge? B, no, I'm not looking for the Wi-Fi. I'm looking for C, Gym-Fi.
Mm. Gym-Fi, wow. Mm-hmm. David Quinley coming in late.
Yes. Sorry, David. Pablo is already doing it. Yeah, you can do it next week. Next week, David. Yeah. Gosh, what could the answer be? Oh, I think Pablo said A again.
Pablo yes. with A.
A is correct. Yes, here we go. Last one. Question number three. In the newest issue of Storm, what is teased on the cover? Is it A, a Thunder War? B, what's the P stand for? Potentially A? C, Michael P. Moron.
Or D, a Thunderwear, which is your Ooh. Really your best underwear.
Your strongest, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's definitely got a crack in it.
Oh, oh. No. No high five.
Are
no,
you hiding? Are you hiding in shame or
no, that was a high five. That was a high five. That's
Pablo already said A.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A,
well, congratulations, Pablo. You are getting a gift card to Midtown
You're
Comics.
Get rich.
Email. You're getting rich.
You're gonna get rich.
Shoot an email to us and we'll get that off to you. Pete, what was the secret movie you were
Of course, we're talking about the 1989 sequel, Ghostbusters 2.
Of course.
Oh, really? I would have been a flex. Oh, that's fun. It would have been a flex for you to say the movie was also Scarface.
Well, as we all know, new comics are coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
Oh, man. So many great stuff coming out tomorrow.
So many great stuffs.
I am looking forward to Absolute Wonder Woman number 10, as well as Absolute Martian Manhunter number 5, and Godzilla number 1.
God, haven't we had enough of that big nope. old lizard?
Not yet.
I am looking forward to a bunch of things as well. Storm number 10. I mean, we're in the tank for this book. It's one of the most fun comics on the stand. We've talked about it so much. Check it out if you haven't. I'm intrigued by the preview pages I saw for The Voice Said Kill number 1. Mm-hmm. Cy Spurrier, always a wild time whenever he's writing. But Vanessa Del Rey's art was really lighting me up. And there was one more that I wanted to mention.
Was it what Easy Reader said? History of DC Universe number 2? Is that what it?
No, but I am excited to read that because I liked the way the first one was just a list of characters, essentially. But no, I was going to say this comic, which is called The Seasons number 6, Rick Remender's comic that I have been one of my favorite Remenders that he's done in a while. So shouts to that about a family drawn into a fantastical and terrifying circus.
Wait, you're saying this Rick Remender is your favorite Remender?
This comic is one of my favorite that he's done lately. And Runaways number 2.
There are a bunch of things that I'm looking forward to. I'll give a shout out to Sleep number 3 from Image Comics. This book has been very intense. It seems to be telling the story of what happens to this guy between werewolf attacks. Like, every time he goes to sleep, he rips apart his small town, wakes up, and then has to deal with the destruction. It's very tense, very harrowing, and the art is really unique as well. Also, new issue of Ice Cream Man. Always curious. Check that out. And I've been really enjoying Exquisite Corpses. I know that's 3 Image Comics books, but that's a death match between crazy serial killers in a small town. Just a fun horror mashup story from Jamestown IV, Michael Walsh, and a bunch of their friends.
JT4.
And all of those books and many more books are going to be in our Stack podcast that drops Wednesday, 9 a.m., both in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
We did it.
Bunch of people we want to thank. We want to thank
everybody.
Jenna Dingo Doodles, Waldanga, Felix Inrich, and Avery Howitt for coming on to talk about Fool's Gold, Death by Karaoke. That's in stores now. Also, Todd Harris and Mark Morales for talking about The Magical. That's going to be on Zoop next week, but you can sign up for the pre-launch page now. And Ed Kunal for talking about Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia, as well as Deadpool VR. Make sure to check out all of those things. Next week on the show, James III is going to be here with Connor Ratliff to talk about Dynamite's Stitch book. And James Messia is going to be here to talk about Smokey's Junior Rangers, Return of Smokey the Bear.
So
that should be a fun time. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday. Check it out in its own feed. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. You can check that out
very soon to be talking about Fantastic Four First Steps. Also, Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. We're talking about Superman. We had a spoiler review of that. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah. Ooh, I'll be in Montreal all week. Hit me up.
Take care of yourself.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.